30th, 2017. We got what? B. Gimel Shvat Tavshinayin Zayim. They like to discuss the issue of Lo Sachmod, the tenth of the Aseret Nedivos. So perhaps just understanding what the mitzvah is. How does one violate the prohibition of Lo Sachmod? And in some ways you might end up thinking, how does one not violate the prohibition of Lo Sachmod? In theory, if we say it's coveting something that you don't have, well, if you're coveting something you don't have, that's what you do every time you go to the supermarket. I covet orange juice, because I want to have orange juice tonight. So is that a violation of Lo Sachmod, simply because I desire something that is currently owned by the supermarket, or something that I see in someone else's house? Oh, I want a couch like that. So I want to go, and I'm going to buy something like that. So is that then a violation of Lo Sachmod? Or then, finally, the last one, which maybe then falls into it, if I am in the small house and I say, I want your couch, because that would fit perfectly into our house, and the smalls say to me, well, it's not for sale. I say, oh, come on, anything is really for sale. There's always, everything ultimately having a price. And then I convince the smalls to sell it to me, either because they find me annoying enough that they just want me to get out of their house, or because they know I'm the rabbi of their shul and I can make life otherwise miserable for them if they don't sell it to me. So maybe that's then a violation of Lo Sachmod. That already we start hearing how there could be violations there. So don't worry, we're not the first generation to have a problem with defining what Lo Sachmod is. It is already described that way, that there is significant confusion as to what the prohibition is in a Gemara in Bava Metzia. Gemara in Bava Metzia, daf hey, oh, and by the way, just to make things a little more confusing, in our Aseret HaDibros, Lo Sachmod Beis Riecha, Lo Sachmod Eishes Riecha, V'Yavdo V'Yamuso V'Shrov V'Chamaro, that the word Sachmod is used to describe things in another person's house, or their wife, or their servants, or their maidservants, or their oxen, or their donkeys, and anything that they have. So all of those seem to be included. Now, beyond that, in the second Luchos, in the Luchos as they appear in Parshas Va'aschanan, it spells out the prohibition a little bit differently. It says, "V'lo sachmod eishes riecha." You shouldn't have chemda. You shouldn't desire your friend's wife. "V'lo sisaveh." Nor should you desire. How is that different than the word chemda? Nor should you desire the base riecha sadehu, your friend's field, and the other things that they have. So what then is the difference between the prohibition of chemda versus the prohibition of sisaveh? Right, so that is another question that is overarching this entire discussion. So there is a Gemara in Maseches Bava Metzia towards the beginning of Bava Metzia. It doesn't seem like it should be relevant to this, but the Gemara in Bava Metzia discusses how does Bava Metzia start? Anybody know the first mission of Bava Metzia? No, the talis. Two people, Shnayim Ochsin the talis. Two people grab the talis, and they both claim that it's theirs. And they show up in Basin, both still holding this talis, trying to figure out, trying to claim that it's theirs. My grandfather, Allah Shalom, when he, from Germany, so he still, that was the first Mishnah he learned from Cheder, and he would, at our Shabbos table, still repeat it, Balpa, the entire Mishnah, was his Cheder Rebbe, he made him know it by heart. So anyway, so that's the Mishnah in the beginning with Sechus Bumbetzi. So the Gemara asks a question, says, wait a second, we have a problem, because why are we making this person swear? Why are we making this person swear? Why don't we just believe them? Right? So what's the purpose of making them swear? Because we're concerned that maybe they're not going to tell the truth. Right? So therefore we make them take Yeshua in order to encourage them to make sure they're telling the truth. But we have a rule in Judaism, and that is that if a person is already, if we are choshed, that or we possibly have a rule in Judaism, that's what the Gemara is debating, that if a person is choshed al mamona, if a person is not, where you don't necessarily trust him with regards to money, we're also not going to trust him with regards to their shvua. And here we have, with regards to their oath. So here we have a situation where two people are making opposite claims, so we obviously can't believe both of them. So shouldn't we be choshed on their shvua? Shouldn't we be concerned their shvua is not really true? So the Gemara, towards the bottom of Daf Heyam and Beis of Maseches Bava Metzia, asks, he says, there too, that in the case of In the case, in here, where a person has something from somebody else, so the Gemara asks, Hasanami Morava Amar, Dami Kayavinanlay. He says, I'm willing to pay for the other half for what I'm asking for him. So the Gemara asks, okay, so even though you're willing to pay, and therefore you don't consider yourselves robbing, but still, even when you're considered to pay, you should still be in violation of the prohibition of Losachmud. Amrali Ravachami Difti Luravina Bahaka Avra Al Lab Losachmud. But yes, even though you're willing to pay, you are in violation of Losachmud, implying that what? Implying that in order to violate Losachmud, it's still an aspect of payment. So I convince Bruce to sell me his bag over there. That is a pretty nice Stanzi bag that you have there on the desk. So I convince him, Bruce doesn't want to give it to me, but I convince him to give it to me, even though he doesn't really want to. So I'm in violation of Losachmud, even though I paid him for him, even though I gave him money. So the Gemara answers, well, Losachmud inche below demei mashmud. He says, well, people don't think that the prohibition of Losachmud is even when I... is only when I don't give him money. But if I did give him money, people assume that I'm not in violation of Losachmud. So therefore, what the implication is that even though I give him money for it, and even though I give him fair money for it, if he didn't want to sell it, I'm still in violation of Losachmud. That's implication A of the Gemara. Implication B of the Gemara is that even though that's the din, most people don't realize that's the din. Most people don't realize that that's prohibited. So what relevance does that have, whether people realize it's prohibited or whether they don't realize it's prohibited? Well, very simple. Why is it that if a person is not considered trustworthy with regards to monetary matters, we're not going to believe his shvua? Because the person just doesn't care about Hashem, right? The person just doesn't care about prohibitions. So he says, oh, what do I care? Right? I violated the prohibition. What do I care about violating prohibitions? But if the person doesn't actually think that they're in violation of prohibitions, if the person doesn't actually think that they're in violation of Losachmud, we still have to take the Shvua. Because he believes in the Torah. He believes in mitzvahs of the Torah. He believes that there are some things that are allowed and some things that are not allowed, and he's only going to do those things that are allowed, or he's only going to do those things which he thinks is allowed to do, even if maybe they're not. So in this scenario, he doesn't think he has violated the din. Therefore, we're still going to believe his shvua. Okay? But with regards to our halacha, with us trying to figure out what is the prohibition of Losachmud, what is the takeaway from this Gemara, that it sounds like even though a person gave another person money and paid for it, there's still a violation of Losachmud. There's still a violation of thou shall not be jealous. So we see that there is that the prohibition, the actual playing out of the prohibition, it sounds like, it's not just me walking around saying to myself, why am I stuck with this little bag that the strap keeps coming off when I could have Bruce's really fancy schmancy bag, right? Why? What?
It's Aaron.
Even with the tear that shows that it's worn,
it's still coveted,
and you know that's considered retro. Right? You can actually get more money for it because of the tear that's. And I want a tear exactly like Bruce's, right? So So maybe that's the violation of Losachmud. So it's not that. It sounds like from this Gemara that the violation is when I give him money and I pay him for it. He doesn't want to give it up. I give him money anyways, and I run away with it. That sounds like the prohibition of Losachmud. Okay? That's step...
But not if you go to a grocery store.
So that would totally exclude the grocery store issue. Because a grocery store, those things aren't for sale. They want business to happen. They want those things to be sold. So therefore, that clearly would not be a violation of Losachmud. But me going to a private person and saying that I want something of theirs and convincing them to give it to me and for me to buy it from them is not necessarily okay. Now, you do have the problem of, yeah, but everything is for sale. If a person is a business owner, right, so when you say, are you selling your business? No, I'm not selling my business. Right? Are the Knicks willing to trade Carmelo Anthony? That's the big debate right now. The Knicks are going to trade Carmelo Anthony. So a person could call up the Knicks and say, hi, are you willing to trade Carmelo Anthony? What if they're not willing to trade him? He says, okay, but everybody has a price. Are you willing to sell? Are you willing to trade Porzingis? No, we're not trading Porzingis. Absolutely not. Really, we'll give you LeBron James for Porzingis. Oh, well. Everybody has a price, right? Len, you following all this?
Yeah.
Right? Everybody ultimately has a price, so is that then okay? So the Knicks are willing to make that deal. The Knicks are more than willing to make that deal. So is that, I mean, at what point, that's a very gray area. The truth is, after studying the sugya over the last couple of weeks ago, we went through the sugya, I wasn't able to really come to a conclusion on where is that line of not something is or isn't for sale. But let's continue on in the sugya a little bit. How does the Rambam define this prohibition then? Yes.
So let's say somebody has a car that you like, but you don't want his car. You would like a car like his car. So is that a violation?
Right, so it sounds like it's not. Now, yeah, keep in mind, in the time of Chazal, it's going to be hard to know that exactly, because in the time of Chazal, they don't have commercial items like we have today. It's a different... If a person wants that wagon, that's the wagon. It's not like you can go to the store. It's not like there's a Pumpadisa wagon show going on in town the entire week, which my kids struck me to yesterday downtown. Not recommended. I don't know. My kids had a great time. The Philadelphia Auto Show is going on right now. So my someone showed up at Torah Academy from the Philly Auto Show and gave away free tickets to some kids. So my kids had tickets and they were like, "Oh, we gotta go," and they seem to love it. I was like thinking, so next Sunday we're going to go to the Honda dealership and mainline Honda and see what they have there. I didn't really understand what was so wonderful about this. It just felt like a huge room that smelled like leather. But anyways, what?
That's a good thing.
As opposed... If you like that kind of thing, I guess. Okay, so there is another Gemara. You know, before we go on to the various sheets of the Rishon, there is another Gemara. The Gemara appears in Sanhedrin, Daf Chaf Hei Amud Beis, where the Gemara there is making the rules as to who's postulate, who's prohibited from testifying. And the Gemara comments that they added on two categories of people. Besides anybody who violates a lav sheish b'maisa, a lav that includes an actionable offense, that is the general rule for somebody who is pasulaidus, which by the way is relevant for people who, a person is a robber, he's pasulaidus. So this question kind of shows up if you're at a wedding, let's say you're the aid, you're a witness at a wedding. So that's a lot of pressure. All the other things that goes on at a wedding, so okay, they have to be done by somebody who believes in God. But the witnesses, they actually have to be people who don't violate any prohibitions at all. So that's a major issue. But anyways, so the Gemara talks about, first of all, what it means to be a goslin. What's that talking about? And it gives a detail halacha as to what that would be included. And the Gemara asks, is it the let me backtrack. So the Mishnah then adds two more. The Mishnah says two other people are prohibited, gazlanim and chamsanim. That people who are considered gazlanim, robbers, and chamsanim, what are chamsanim? So chamsanim are generally translated as people who are really, really mean, cruel people. So those people are also prohibited from being edim, are also prohibited from being witnesses at anything. So the Gemara asks, wait one second, gazlanim, robbers, they're already prohibited, right? Aren't they already a problem? So the Gemara gives a detail and says, no, it's talking about those people that take things from a deaf person that a deaf person found. I mean, if a deaf person finds something on the street, so they pick it up. Do they own that object? Or let's say a child. I forget to take it out of a deaf person. A child. My son, Yehoshua. So Yehoshua's walking down the street, he finds $20. Does he own that $20? Finders keepers. The only problem is, yes, in theory you're right. Let's say $20 totally unmarked in a non-Jewish neighborhood, right? In theory he has it. The only problem is that al pi halacha, a katan is not able to affect a kinyan on a level of doraisa, on a biblical level. So yeah, he could pick it up, but he doesn't actually own it. So let's say along comes Scrooge McDuck, and he says, "Ah, look at that! A 10-year-old walking around with a $20 bill that he just found in the street." So Scrooge McDuck comes and takes it from him. So he technically has not violated Gezeila, right? Because Yehoshua, my son, technically didn't own it yet. So come the Rabbanan and say that people that engage in such activity are then going to be pasul eidus, are on a rabbinic level prohibited, are not acceptable as witnesses. Therefore, Scrooge McDuck is now not acceptable as a witness.
What's the Hebrew word for referring
to a cruel person? Well, that he's not a cruel person. He's a goslin. I mean, the robber that was added on, being a regular goslin, if Scrooge McDuck comes and takes $20 that Bruce Greif found on the street, so he's a goslin, and everybody knows that he's pasul eidus, that he's not going to be allowed to testify. But if he stole it from a 10-year-old who found that on the street, who technically doesn't own it, so he's technically not a goslin, so the rabbis came along and said, no, sorry Charlie, even you are going to be considered a goslin as well, and you're not going to be able to testify at weddings or at anything else. That's the law of one. Then there is the law of a chamson. Who is a chamson? So the Gemara said, "Meikara chamson literally means a cruel person." So meikara savar, originally they thought the meikayahiv, the chamson thinks, if I give money, it's okay. Akrai bialmahu, it's not considered a problem. So came the kachatfi gazru rabbanu. But then they saw that the chamson would first take the merchandise and throw that money. I mean, I'd walk over to Bruce when he's not really looking so carefully, and I'd slap down $20 and take his bag because I like it so much. So I technically haven't stolen. Right? I technically haven't stolen. But that's considered cruel, and therefore I am pasul eidus. Right? On a level of derabbanan. Following so far?
I think it's stealing.
What?
I think it's stealing.
You think it's stealing, but I paid him market value.
That's how he values it.
Yeah, that's the price. I mean, that's the value. He got his value.
But I don't want the money.
I understand, but you got your $20. So I technically haven't stolen, but you're considered a chamson. Tosfos asks on the page, wait a second. Maybe he didn't violate the prohibition of lo sigzol because he gave him the money, but it sounds like he violated the prohibition of lo sachmod. He started violating the prohibition. That's the tenth of the Aseret Divros. Isn't that what the prohibition is? So Tosfos actually answers here and says, no, it's not. Lo sachmud is only when he doesn't give money. But once he gave money, there's no prohibition of lo sachmud, you haven't violated the din. Wait a second, what about the Gemara in Bava Metzia that seemed to say that that's the guy who is considered as being violated the din? So Tosfos says, no, you read the Gemara in a different way, you don't have to read the Gemara that way, and that's not the din. Lo sachmud is only violated if you don't give money for it. Now, wait a second, so have you violated one? What is his definition of violating it? So it could be that Tosfos violating definition of violating it is if you steal something. If you steal something, so then you have now violated the prohibition of lo sachmud, right? So that's possibility. That's shita in the Rishona number one. There is no prohibition of lo sachmud if there is money that is changing. If there is money that is changing hands. The general psak, however, is like the Rambam. And the Rambam says, kol chomid, anybody who's desirous of something that belongs to another person, this is Hilchos Gezeila Perek Aleph Alachates, or anything that he can purchase, he says, even though he gives money for it, afal pish nasan lo damim rabba, even though he gives a lot of money, hareza over below tasek, shenemar lo sachmod, you have violated a prohibition of lo sachmod, you have violated that din, even though you gave money for it. And the Rambam continues on and says, but you don't get malchus for this. Now, we learned the rule about malchus here. What's the rule? What do people get malchus on? There's a lot of exemptions from the rule of prohibition. What types of prohibitions do people get malchus on? So the general assumption is a lav sheyesh bo maisa, a prohibition that includes an action with it. So the Rambam comes along and says, but you don't get malchus for it because it's a lav sheyesh bo maisa. Right? That's line one. So Rambam says you violate lo sachmod even if you give money, but you don't get makos because there's no action involved. And the very next line the Rambam says is ve'enu over belav zeh ash yikach hachefet shechamad. But you're not in violation of the din until you take the thing that you desired. Wait a second. I thought you just said that it's a lav she'ein bo maisa. So how can on one hand you tell me that it's a lav she'ein bo maisa that doesn't have a And therefore I don't get Machus. It's a non-actionable offense because and therefore I don't get Machus. But then you tell me the very next line is, but the only way you violate the din is if you actually acquire the item. How do you resolve that issue? So that was enough for the Ravid to say, well, that's why it doesn't make any sense. And I pass differently. He says that if he agrees to the sale, it's not a violation of Los Achmod. However, if he never agrees, so then it is going to be a violation of Los Achmod. But however, if the seller never agrees, even if he's given the full value of the item, that's a violation of Los Achmod. But because the kinyan was done, so therefore it's not going to be Lav Shem Maisa. Or maybe he would agree that you actually would get Makos. I'm not sure he actually mentions that.
Doesn't
the
covering infer
Lav Shem
Maisa from the thought or feeling rather than?
Right, so they're saying no. There has to be a if it's a prohibition in the Torah, it has to be an action. That's what they're suggesting. So the Ravid says, no, you don't. You know why you don't get Malkus on it? Because Los Achmod is actually a derivative of Gezela. It's a derivative of stealing. So you don't get Malkus on stealing. Why did you get Malkus on stealing? Do you know? You don't get Malkus on stealing because there's a mitzvah to pay it back. So it's what we call lav hanita klase. It's a prohibition that leads to a positive commandment, and therefore you're not going to be chayiv makos on because you have a different thing to do in order to get your pay. So he says that's why you're not chayiv makos. But how can you tell me with one line that it's a lav she'im b'maisa, and then the very next line you come along and say, but the only way you violated it is with a maisa, is with an action. That's the question that the Ravid has on the Rebbe.
How does it become different than you shall not steal?
The Rambam is talking about even when you paid for it. Now, that is a question on Tosfos. Tosfos seems to say, yeah, the only way you violate Los Achmon is if you actually go ahead and steal it. That's what he's saying. Right, so he's going to... It's not necessarily. There are times in the Torah where we have... where the Gemara says, well, it's to impose two prohibitions on you. That is just... that the same action could be subject to multiple prohibitions. Los Achmon is the... is the attitude, lo sigzel is the action or something, but yeah, it could be that the only way you would actually be able to violate the prohibition of Torah is for that, is within that din. But how do we answer this question on the Rambam? How does the Rambam say that it's a lav, on one hand, a lav she'in bo maisa, again, a non-actionable offense, but yet say the only way you violate it is with action? So the Magid Mishnah, one of the commentaries on the side of the Rambam, he says, well, the main acquisition in Vayisur is not really the prohibition. The prohibition is the work that went into getting it. That you went and plotted and planned, etc. That's really the prohibition. And the acquisition is not really the prohibition. So how do you understand? What does he mean by that? So that's explained by the Stipler, Rav Yaakov Kanievsky. Rav Yaakov Kanievsky is the father of Rav Chaim Kanievsky. He's still alive today. Rav Yaakov Kanievsky is known as the Stipler Gaon. He's known most famous for his work on the Kilas Yaakov on many Masechtas, on all Masechtas in Shas. And he also has a Sefer on Chumash by Parsha entitled Birchas Peretz. Birchas Peretz is... the reason he writes in the introduction is that his father's name was Chaim Peretz, so therefore that's the Peretz part. His mother's name was Bracha, so therefore Birchas Peretz, named after his parents. So it's written, something on every parsha of the Torah. And then in the back, he has long gematria setups, like, this entire sentence in gematria equals this entire sentence in gematria. So, for example, in our parak, let's just give one. We're just talking about osin maasei avotechem biyadechem, and that's what Unkla says. Albanim al shlishim v'al rabiim is the gematria v'zeu kishim osin maasei avotechem biyadechem. Got that? You want to do the math? Right, but that's what he does. That's in the back of this book. But in the front of this book, he goes, you'll believe him. No, I didn't do it either. But the way he explains this this Rambam, I think, is the most simple explanation. Is to say, no, Los Achmod is a violation that happens in the head. It's not something that happens in the hand. It is an attitude that's a problem. But at what point have I violated the Issur D'oraisa? Right? If I walk by Bruce's bag and say, oh, that's a nice bag, I wouldn't mind getting one of those for myself. So have I now violated the prohibition? No. What if I think to myself, if I offer Bruce $20 for that bag, maybe he'll give it to me. Right? If I violate the prohibition, so suggest to him, no. Right? What if I even ask Bruce for the bag? Say, hey, Bruce, here, look, $20. Not just the $20, it's nice and crisp the way you like it. Is that enough to... Have I then violated Lo Sachmar? So says the stipler, well, you're getting close, but you haven't actually violated the prohibition. At what point have you violated the prohibition? Only at the point when I actually managed to get it from Bruce. When I either steal it from him or even get it from him without him saying Rotsani, without him wanting to do it, right? If I do one of those things, I have violated Lo Sachmud. Not because I did the action, but because my desire got to the point that it caused me to do the action. Get that? So the Lo Sachmud is the thing that's going on in my head. It's just, what is the shear? What is the amount that is required in order for me to be in violation of the prohibition? Only once it drives me to do the action. Got that? It's a nice split, but it makes a lot of sense. The prohibition is really about what's going on in my head. But I only define what's going on in my head based on whatever happens with my hands, whatever I actually end up doing as a result of my desire. So that is the standard understanding of how you define what's happening.
Suggest that you are in violation, but the punishment, if you will, is what you do to yourself. And then when you actually take action, then the punishment will come from a base sin. In other words, if you go through the thought process in your head, it's not actionable by a base sin, but you are really, who's hurting? You're hurting yourself.
Okay.
This is almost God's prescription to say, you don't want to be miserable.
What's the punishment for having chemda, for having a desire? The chemda, the desire, is the punishment. You say, okay, maybe.
Right.
Maybe, but once it actually comes into an action, so then, okay.
It will come. Sakhmo is not the same thing as kina.
As what?
Kina
is... Well, kina is really jealousy of another person. Yeah, that's, I think, is tomorrow's Musar Day topic. Kina versus Chemda. And why is this really part of the Tesaris of Dibra? Seems to be... It doesn't quite fit in with the rest of the nine. Right? So we'll... That's set for tomorrow.
Let's say be jealous of that person. Let's say this person has a beautiful life. You're jealous of his beautiful life. But you don't necessarily want his wife, but you're jealous of him.
Yeah. I don't really know how to define that, but I hear. Okay, so Lo Sachmud, we generally understand to just be that it's... Sachmud is the action, to Saveh is the desire. That if one plots his mind to do it, as soon as he's plotting, he's violating Lo Saveh. Lo Sachmud is when you actually go ahead and do it. That's what he would suggest. Fine. And then one or two other details. If the Parsha, the way it's described in Devarim, is both the words Chemda and Tisaveh are both used. It says Lo Sachmud Eishes Riacha, and then it says Lo Sisaveh Beis Riacha Sadeh. Lo Sisaveh Beis Riacha Sadeh. V'yavdav Asovish Ravacham Ravachol Eshele Riacha. So one issue is Chemda, and then it lists Eishes Riacha, the wife of your friend. And then it says, and don't desire the long list of other things. So why is your wife or your friend not included in the rest of the list? How is that? Why does that seem to be singled out? So Rav Hirsch, here in Shmos, answers that question by saying that by all other items, Lo Sisaveh is the first step to violating Lo Sachmud. If you assume Lo Sisaveh is the plotting and Lo Sachmud is when you actually reach the point that your plots reach fruition, you actually go ahead and do the action, so then Lo Sisaveh is building up to Lo Sachmud. But when it comes to Eishes Riacha, when it comes to the wife of your friend, So that already is inherently a major problem. Right? That already, that you're plotting at all, that already is a violation of losachmud itself and needs to be avoided. So that the source for that I found in one of these shiurim that's on my rabbi website. So the author of the shiurim, Rabbi Josh Flug, so he suggests that you can maybe add in that how are you? What does it mean aishas reach? The losachmud aishas reach. Don't desire your friend's wife. So it's not necessarily that you desire her as to have an affair with her. It's not necessarily a sexual thing. It might just be losachmud. I desire her to be my wife. So how do you go about him getting to be your wife? So there's a couple of stages to that. First, you have to get her to be divorced from her husband, right? And then you have to go and. Right, there's a couple ways of doing this, but you could just maybe convince the husband that he doesn't want to be with her. Like I think there was an episode of Seinfeld that he once tried to convince Uncle Leo to not be with this woman because his parents were staying at Uncle Leo's house, and he wanted Uncle Leo to go back to his apartment so that his parents would move back down to Florida. Right, so he had to convince Uncle Leo to stop dating this girl. Right, so that whole plotting is a problem. So he suggests that when it comes to specifically with regards to another person's wife, the real problem is before you go ahead and do the action. The real problem is that part. Once you already somehow convinced the husband to divorce his wife so that you can then go ahead and marry her, so okay, so then it's mutter in theory for you to go ahead and marry her. But the real problem in that scenario is what takes place beforehand, and that's why that gets the losach mode the entire time. It doesn't rise to the issue of losisaveh at all. There's a couple of other details here this is applied to tzedakah. Let's say I go and I'm raising money from somebody, and the person says, "All right, you know, I hear this is a good cause. I'll give you $100." $100. You know, I really need. Expect you to give $1,000. $1,000. That's deep. Oh, come on. You know, we really need $1,000. We really need to count on you for that. So the person doesn't really want to give it, and now I've convinced him to give it over. So if I have violated losach mode by pushing that person to give more money than he actually wanted to do. So there are achronim that say that no, you haven't, because that has to do with the mitzvah. When it has to do with a mitzvah, so then that losach mode A doesn't apply to mitzvahs in general. It sounds like with tzedakah itself, with that issue itself, there is a concept called kofen al tzedakah. The Gemara discusses that you can force people to give tzedakah. So you can't then apply the prohibition of losach mode from any way is allowed to force the person to do so. So therefore, it probably doesn't apply to sach mode. The question where, as I discussed a little bit before, the question where it really comes up is the... you know, where to draw this line is like high pressure negotiations. A person is ready to walk out. Oh, I'm not settling for that. I'm, you know, forget it, deal's off. And then I go and convince the person to come in. Now, at what point does negotiations end, good faith negotiations end, and chemda begin? So that is a challenging line to figure out. I have not been able to really get it clear in my head as to where that line is, but maybe. Well, I guess we continue to learn a little bit more. All right, let's stop here.